Shriram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ramo, Shriram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ramo, Shriram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ramo, Shriram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ramo. Chant that's been given to us by Papa and through Mother. It's the most remarkable thing. If we chant it with full faith and devotion, it will instantly bring us to a state of peace, uplift us, and make us feel in touch with the divine. Papa once said that there's nothing special in Ram Nam in that it is the faith that we put into it and the love and the devotion, and that is the truth to it. But it is also true that for so many thousands of years, saints have chanted this chant and gone all the way to their God realization. So it's like following a trail up into the mountains that is well worn and well marked, and that you can follow all the way to the top without hesitation or difficulty. And so we're given a tremendous boon if we would accept it. When we feel lonely or if we are struggling with some difficulty and we begin to chant this chant, we'll instantly feel God's presence and God's love and God's joy. If you need courage, it's a time to chant, but it is always time to chant. And when this chant begins to revolve around and around within your own mind, it has this tendency to go in and go into the unconscious mind and destroy all the unconscious seeds of karma. They're waiting to sprout and to be brought into life. And because it's such a powerful vibration, such a powerful name, it has the capacity for destroying those karmic seeds and can release you and make you one with your infinite Lord. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Fantastic thing. So let us chant the name of God, morning, noon, and night, until it becomes such a part of us that it's just automatically going on no matter what else. Now, if you'll pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence. You are my beloved. I come to You in all humility and give myself to You completely. Take my hand, take my soul, take my heart, and transform it into thy eternal kingdom. Peace. Bliss. Amen. I can think of nothing better to do with my time than for us all to be together and to be focusing upon God and Gurus. Reading from the Autobiography of a Yogi, Chapter 35, The Christ-like Life of Lhari Mahasya. Thus it becometh us to fulfill all righteousness. In these words, John the Baptist, and in asking John to baptize him, Jesus was acknowledging the divine rights of his guru. From a reverent study of the Bible, from an Oriental viewpoint, and from an intuitional perception, I'm convinced that John the Baptist was, in past lives, the guru of Christ. Numerous passages in the Bible imply that John and Jesus in their last incarnations were respectively Elijah and his disciple Elisha. These are the spellings of the Old Testament. The Greek translators spelled the name Elias and Elishas. They appear in the New Testament in these changed forms. The very end of the Old Testament is a prediction of the reincarnation of Elijah and Elisha. Behold, I send you Elijah, the prophet, before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. Thus John, or Elijah, sent before the coming of the Lord, was born slightly earlier to serve as a herald for Christ. An angel appeared to Zacharias, the father, to testify that his coming son, John, would be no other than Elijah, or Elias. But the angel said unto him, Fear not, Zacharias, for thy prayer is heard, and thy wife Elizabeth shall bear thee a son, and thou shalt call his name John. And many of the children of Israel shall he turn to the Lord their God, and he shall go before them in the spirit and power of Elias, to turn the hearts of fathers to the children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. Jesus twice unequivocally identified Elijah, or Elias, as John. Elias has come already, and they knew him not. Then the disciples understood that he spake to them of John the Baptist. Again, Christ says, For all the prophets and the law prophesied unto John. And if you will receive it, this is Elias, which was for to come. When John denied that he was Elias or Elijah, he meant that in the humble garb of John, he no longer in the outward elevation of Elijah, the great guru. In his former incarnation, he had given his mantle of his glory and his spiritual wealth to his disciple, Elisha. And Elisha said, I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me. And he said, Thou hast asked a hard thing. Nevertheless, if thou see me when I am taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee. And he took the mantle of Elijah that fell from him. The roles became reversed, because Elijah John was no longer needed to be the ostensible guru of Elisha Jesus, now perfected in divine realization. When Christ was transfigured on the mountain, it was his guru, Elias, with Moses, whom he saw. Again, in his hour of extremity on the cross, Jesus cried out the divine name, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. I pronounced that probably mangled, but there it is. That is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Some of them that stood there, when they heard it, said, This man calleth for Elias. Let us see whether Elias will come to save him. The eternal bond of guru and disciple that existed between John and Jesus was present also for Babaji and Lari Mahasya. With tender solicitude, the deathless guru swam the Lethean waters that swirled between the two lives of his chela, and guided the successive steps taken by the child and then by the man, Lari Mahasya. It is not until the disciple had reached his 33rd year that Babaji deemed the time to be ripe to openly reestablish the never-severed link. And so we get a glimpse here from such a tremendous realized master, the inner workings of other great, great masters. This notion that avatars have come to the earth, that God is incarnated upon this earth in perfection, and in an effort to uplift all humanity into divine consciousness, is a tremendous story. It really is. And when we see the law of cause and effect, how John in his previous life had given up his spiritual wealth to his disciple because they knew that he was going to come in this tremendous incarnation, really a world-changing incarnation. And in order to fulfill his goal and that of that incarnation as Jesus, he needed to have that spiritual power, but he not only got that spiritual power that was tremendous, but he got the double portion. And that is that he was imbued with all the power of spirit. And so he came with that complete and total. And so today, to this very day, we worship him and we love him. And he is a conduit for millions and millions of people going back to God. Now, there may be very few who are able to really see into these truths that Master talked about. But nevertheless, people intuitively feel the difference with Jesus. When you focus on his life and any part of his life, we're coming into the season where we celebrate the birth of Jesus. And first comes the prophecies. And then the birth finally comes. And all the stars have come into their right alignment. These wise men, these astrologers, were looking to the stars. They saw there the signs that something tremendous was going to happen. And so it is said in the story that they followed the star. And the star led them to this little stable in Bethlehem. And this is anticipation. This is something of what is to come. In our own lives, we have such portendings that we will come into a new life, that we will be reborn, and that this rebirth is significant, it's tremendous. But it's not something that just happens in one moment. It's not like we just go down to the front of the church and we say that we accept Jesus, and therefore we have the second birth and we are reborn. It's more profound than that. It's much more of a story than that. To receive Jesus, to receive the Christ, means to really open ourselves completely, mind, heart, body. Our entire life becomes receptive to the vibrations that are emanating from this Christ consciousness. This Christ is not just an individual, not just a person who lived 2,000 years ago. Jesus himself said in the very impersonal way, before Abraham was, I am. That's a purely impersonal statement, and it has nothing to do with his body. Clearly, he was referring to something that was in existence long before 33 years earlier he was born into that body. That Christ spirit is eternal, and it is one with God. And Jesus was a manifestation of that. But we have been very blessed on this earth that we have had other manifestations of that pure Christ spirit. In India, in yoga, they call it Kutastha Chaitanya. And that light of the Christ is seen here at the ajna. It's the point between the eyebrows. And when you focus your attention on that point between the eyebrows and you go into the quietness of your own soul, you will see there a beautiful light. And at first you may see a golden light, and also a very deep blue light, and ultimately a five-pointed star. It was so thrilling to me the first time that I saw that star. I had been practicing meditation for some time. My eyes were closed. I was thinking on God. And suddenly that star appeared in my ajna, that point between the eyebrows. And I was so thrilled about it and felt inspired by it. But I was also aware that it was just a vision that came to me. It didn't transform me yet. I hadn't gotten to that point where I could enter into the star, so I just simply saw it. But as you progress and as you begin to get more and more purified within your mind, you will sail through that five-pointed star and you will enter into, you might say, an ocean of light. It is pure light and it is formless. It's difficult to describe because to describe something, you actually need a name, you need a form. You need something that the mind can relate to. And really, in that state, it's very difficult to say what it is. But it is this pure state of being in light. And there is no circumference around your consciousness. You do have a sense of I-ness, but that I-ness spreads out all over all space. And there is no thought there. There is awareness. There is consciousness, but the old reasoning mind that we normally identify with is a complete state of cessation. And it's here that you really get in touch with Christ consciousness. This is the whole point for Jesus taking incarnation. Now, like all great parables, it speaks to many people on many different levels, and so some people can take points of morality from the story of Jesus. Other take points of faith that if they have faith in Jesus, then good things will come, or that in the end of their lives, they'll have a state of salvation. But really, salvation happens right here, right in this body. Jesus said himself that there be some standing here that shall not taste of death till they see the kingdom come. This is what it means. It's the purpose for which he came, as I said before. This cannot be overstated. It is a tendency of the material mind that we always want to put things off sometime later. And what we do is we put God off, and we put the awareness of God off to some other time. Well, it can't be for me. I don't deserve it. This is the devil worshiping or whispering in your ear. This is not the truth. The truth is that you are already a God-realized being. You have that awareness inside of you. It's just that it's become recessive. And it's gone into the background so far that you've come to believe that you're just this simple body and that you operate in this body through the five senses and that's it. That's everything that there is to you. But for those of us who have been called onto a higher path, a deeper path, those who are actually seeking out realization, to those we learn to put aside the body, we put aside the mind. We do that through meditation. Meditation is any form that you put your attention upon God. You can do it through a mantra, you can do it through imagining yourself in the presence of God, watching your breath, and so on. And chanting God's name is one of the greatest. But as we put our minds upon God, at first the mind wants to be very restless. And these are all the different aspects of the Old Testament. The Old Testament is a tremendous blueprint of what every human being goes through. When Adam and Eve fell from grace, so to speak, when they bit into the apple that came from the tree of knowledge, the knowledge of good and evil, of duality, all duality, then the mind became so enmeshed into the world of duality, it completely forgot its sense of sacredness, its sense of wonder. And we see this all over the place, don't we? People have completely forgotten their origins. And it's too bad. It's too bad because then we go on acting out of that ignorance of who we truly are. And then we build up this law of cause and effect, this karma, that keeps on keeping us into more and more delusive states. And we become so lost, so bewildered, that we completely are off track and not aware at all of who and what we are. So this is our path. This is our journey. And one might say that it's not really a journey at all because it's already inside of you, even if you have totally lost sight of it. Plato gave the cave analogy, and in the cave analogy, people were sitting looking at a wall, and behind them a fire was lit and it was casting out light. And so it made shadows of the people up on the wall. And the people became so entranced with the shadows that were up on the wall that were actually their own shadows that they completely forgot that there was anything else. But one day, somebody got up and they walked outside of the cave and they saw a bright, beautiful world, a fantastic world. And they thought, my goodness, all these people are sitting in there looking at their own shadows and they're missing all of this. They're missing real life. And so that one went back in and tried to awaken the others. Listen, if you just turn away from the shadows and come out with me, you'll see this tremendous world. It's filled with technicolor and sounds and smells, things you can't even imagine being here in this cave. And the people in the cave didn't want anything to do with it. They were entranced with the shadows. They thought that was everything that was, and that this individual who had come back to tell them of other worlds, and he must be crazy or delusional himself. And so the man left all these people entranced with their shadows, and he went out to enjoy the wide world. Spiritual masters come to us in this way. Avatars come to us in this way. An avatar is descent of spirit into flesh. And they come to tell us the truth. Now, Mother, when she was going through her experiences and seeing different saints, she had the experience where she is told inwardly that she was the Divine Mother, that she was an incarnation, she was an avatar, and she couldn't believe it. And then she had saint after saint tell her that she was born as an avatar. And yet the way that she felt about herself was that she was just God's littlest child. And this is the way that avatars oftentimes come. In the case of Rama, who is also widely acknowledged as an avatar, he didn't see himself as an incarnation of God. He saw himself as a human being making his way through this world. But he was the perfect example of Dharma. Dharma is doing right action, doing the right thing in all circumstances. And here he was. He was about ready to be crowned king. He's been told by his father, he'd been raised all of his life to think that he would be king. He is told by his father just the day before that the day had come finally that he would be crowned king. And then through circumstances beyond his father's doing, he was told not only that he was not going to be king, but that he was going to be exiled out into the jungles for the next 14 years without anything. And what did he do? He wanted to honor his father's word. It was built on a promise that his father had made many, many years ago. And somebody cashed in on that promise and made him agree that Rama would not be crowned king and that he would be exiled. And what did Rama do? Just imagine yourself. All the kingdom is ready for you to be crowned king. It's your full expectation to do it. And others were grieving for what Rama was going to lose. But he was glad to redeem his father's word, to make his father's word good. He says, Father, I've never coveted being a king. And what means far more to me is that your word be kept. And so it is my great privilege to be able to act out upon your word and not bring any shame upon you. And with complete renunciation, he got himself prepared to go out into the jungle, to leave everything behind and all the people that he loved, and leave them all behind. And he dropped it all just like that. And he left that very day. what an example of purity of mind and purity of intention, dispassion towards the things of this world. He lived in this world. He had all the accoutrements of being a king, of being royalty, all the fame, all the wealth, everything, and he dropped it all, just like that. And so in this life, if we can learn to live like that, you know, there was a man one time, he was the manager of great estates, and he used to tell people, oh yes, this is my mansion. The owner was very rarely there. And so the man took great pride. This is my mansion. These are my properties. You must do what I say. These are my things. And so on. He had a great deal of pride. Well, one day he was fishing in his master's pond that was supposed to be reserved only for the master himself. And the master arrived and saw that he had been fishing out of that pond. And he said, "You have betrayed my trust. You're dismissed." And there he was, and he couldn't take one thing with him. Nothing was his own. And he had to leave. And you can imagine what a great shame he felt as he was walking past all these people that he had lorded it over them, so to speak, for so long. And suddenly it was all gone. No matter how high we rise up in this life, no matter what things that we have, there comes that day when God taps us on the shoulder and says, "My son, my daughter, it is time for you to come. Your life is over. And whatever you have made of yourself in this life is what you take with you and not a thing else." Not a thing else. There's that lovely story of the man who is a great miser, and he hoarded his gold. He hoarded his gold. And one day, God tapped him on the shoulder and his life was over, but he was so determined that he would take that gold with him. So he took a gold brick and with incredible will, he hung on to it as he left the body, and he took that brick of gold with him all the way up, and then he got to the gates of St. Peter. And St. Peter saw that brick of gold that he had brought with him, and he says, "Well, that's very nice for you to bring this for our building program." And he threw it over into a great big pile of gold bricks that they paved the streets with. And it was worth no more than that. And the man realized his error, that he had built his entire life around this gold. And look at what it meant. Look at what it meant. What means something to us when we leave this body is who we are. Master one time asked Sri Yukteswar, and he said, "Are all people in the astral worlds, the place we go when we leave this body, most people go to when they leave this body, are they all beautiful, Master?" And Sri Yukteswar said, "Well, we measure beauty in a different way. It's the light of people's aura that really determine whether somebody is thought to be beautiful or not. It's not the physical feature so much." And so we look with deeper vision, not just how people appear, not just what they own, but how they conduct themselves. I remember long ago, God gave me a vision, and it's always stuck with me. It's been a very powerful thing. And in the vision was a black woman who was being auctioned off as a slave. And that as she was in this room, she stood like a queen. She had a regal bearing about her. And these men who were bidding on her and treating her like so much like a horse, looking at her teeth and her bone structure and everything as to whether she would be strong and could do the work, they looked like peons. They looked pitiful. But she stood there like a queen. And that's always stood with me. It's not so much our circumstances in life, it's how we conduct ourselves. That is what determines whether we are risen up or we are degraded and taken down. And so we have a choice to make when we come into this life. How are we to live this life? Are we to live it just for our own ends? Are we to live it just for selfish desire? Or do we really make something of this life? Do we choose to change and transform ourselves? Do we go through the second birth, the spiritual birth, that one where we transfer our consciousness from the Son of Man, or just purely human consciousness, limited by a human consciousness, and are we reborn as a Son of God, where we come into our divine consciousness? This is the greatest use of our life that you can possibly imagine. One tremendous thing that you can do, reflect every day. If God were to tap you on the shoulder today and say, "My child, the hourglass is up for this lifetime. It is time for you to come with me." What would you think of yourself? What would you think of what you have made with your life? What are the things that stand out to you that are perhaps unaccomplished? It is a very good way to look at those things that are really deeply meaningful to you. You can divide things up into three rough categories. There are the everyday, ordinary kinds of things, just the things that we do to keep life and limb together and keep our life going. And then there are the important things. There are the things that have deeper meaning to us. And if we leave those things unattended, we feel sorrow and we feel out of tune with our life. And then there are a few things that are absolutely essential. And for me, at least, God realization is the essential. If I were to leave this life without having done anything about it, without having made any progress, I would be very, very sorrowful indeed. I remember, and God showed me, a time when I left the body. It was a previous lifetime, and I was raised up. And I had the experience of reviewing my life with this great being of light next to me. And I was deeply aware that I had come into that lifetime with a great desire for spiritual progress, but I had gotten caught up in all the little things of life. It's so easy to do, isn't it? And I had gotten caught up with all of those things, and I had neglected doing the one thing that I had vowed myself to do. And it disturbed and it distressed me so greatly at that moment in reviewing my life that I vowed never to forget again. I didn't want to go through that pain that I was experiencing then ever again. If we can avoid going through that kind of painful reflection, where we recognize that we really didn't do what we came to do, if we can, at that moment of leaving this body, say with Jesus, "It is finished." And in addition to that, we can say, "It is good." It is good. Deep down in our soul, we know that we have attended to the essential things in life. We have attended to the important things in life. And that we've kept the rest of our ship of life running in some good order. And so that when we leave this life, we leave with no regrets. No regrets. We all leave this life. This is something we must remember. Not in a macabre kind of sense. You know, once you leave this life and you're aware of the life beyond this life, you realize that this is the cave. This body of five senses, we're playing with shadows of ourselves. And when we leave this body, we can step out into this bright, beautiful world. But we don't have to wait till we die, nor should we. That is a world to be discovered now. There are so many fantastic states of consciousness for you to attain to. Jesus said, "In my Father's kingdom, there are many mansions. There's so many experiences to be had that you could be having right now. When you realize that the air that surrounds you is filled with bliss, a blissful vibration. When you realize that God is constantly streaming to you, in your thought, in your heart, in your deepest recesses of your soul, that you have a divine companion who is with you always. When you have the intuitive wisdom that God's thoughts are constantly streaming to you. Mother said she had a direct pipeline to God. That's not unique to her. It is how we are made to be. It is part of our operating manual that we somehow forgot along the way someplace. But thank goodness that we have avatars who have come, who have given us operating manuals in how to live our lives so that we don't become deeply confused and lost. God is not far from you. He is the breath behind your own breath. He is the thought behind your own thinking. And He is the love behind your own feeling. And when you look for Him and open yourself, when you receive Him, then you experience Him, you feel Him, you know that you are that, that you are that. Tat Tvam Asi. You are that, that divine presence, that divine essence, and that you have always been. Before you came into this incarnation, before Abraham was, I am, that great I am. You are that, if you could but know it. And the truth is, that's the purpose for which we have come. So as we enter into this season of celebrating the birth of Christ, let us go deeper. Let us plumb the depths of these teachings and realize that it is telling our story, your story, my story, everyone's story, but particularly those who are dedicating their lives to realizing that great presence, going deeper into the silence of your own being, and there finding revealed to you the divine consciousness. There is nothing on this world that is more exciting, that is more satisfying. God, who is the author of everything, whatever it is that you love about life, God is that, but it's a tiny subset of God. And God is more than that. So whether it be music, or whether it be a special area of interest or a hobby, your work, whatever it is that you have special love for, that is God, a manifestation of God on this world. And when you truly feel that way, when you go about your life, you will be in a state of bliss. So please awaken. Be alert. Choose God. Choose to hear the prophecies from ancient times that God is coming. God with us, Emmanuel, God with us. And that happens right within your own being. That is the second coming. People look to the skies, but really they should be looking to the sky of their own being, the Ajna. That is the portal. That is the doorway to the kingdom of heaven. And that is where you meet the Christ and merge your being into His. This is the most tremendous story in the entire world, in the entire creation. And can you believe it? It is your story, if you make it so. if you will chant with me. Lord, let my attention be forever fixed upon thee. Let me love thee, let me serve thee, let me worship thee alone. Thou art all and all in all. Lord, let my attention be forever fixed upon thee. Let me love thee, let me serve thee, let me worship thee alone. Thou art all and all in all. Lord, let my attention be forever fixed upon thee. Let me love thee, let me serve thee, let me worship thee alone. Thou art all and all in all. Thou art all and all. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. I bow to the light within you. May that second coming arise within you. You may know God through and through and through, and love Him so completely that you surrender everything that you are at His feet, and that He makes you His very own.